Hello and welcome to On the Page, a podcast brought to you by the Writers Festival of Belgium, very happily. I'm Alia Papageorgiou, and today we have the pleasure to be transported to Miami, still with the question of what is a Writers Festival? Mitchell Kaplan joins us, who is the owner of Books and Books, which are several bookstores around Miami. And he's very much involved also with the Miami Book Fair. And he takes us through its now 40-year history during the podcast. I hope you really enjoy this conversation. I've been asking what makes a writer's festival, what's like the core ingredient. And I've been a great admirer of Mitchell's for a long time. And I was really happy when he said yes and we got a chance to talk. We're here to keep books right at the top of your agenda in Brussels. If you do want to reach out to us or have something to share, please do on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, Writers Festival of Belgium. Enjoy the show.
I grew up in Miami, actually. Mm. I was raised here. My parents came here early on in their lives. And so I was actually born on Miami Beach. At a time when Miami Beach was not the way it is perceived right now. Miami Beach then was basically thought of as a retirement community. Mm-hmm. When I was a child, the median age in Miami Beach was 68. Everyone's grandparent lived on Miami Beach. So I couldn't wait to leave. And I actually, in the early 70s, went to college in Colorado. But I was an English major, so reading was always kind of a part of my life, although I never thought it would become a career. I did a few other things. I went to graduate school. I taught for a while. And then in 1982, I was living in Miami for a couple of years, and I decided to open a bookstore. So about 41 years ago, I opened Books and Books. And from the beginning, Miami was a very, very, very multicultural community. In some ways, it was in the vanguard of what was happening in the world. In 1980, there was an influx coming from Cuba, from Mariel. It was called the Mariel Boatlift. Mm-hmm. Castro had opened his country, and hundreds of thousands of people left, and many of them ended in Miami. Without any housing, without any way to support themselves. It was a really big shock to the system of Miami. And at the same time, in 1980, there were racial wars that were going on. Not racial wars, but racial conflict. There were riots. There was a horrible killing of a young motorcyclist who happened to be black by the Miami Police Department. And it was known as the McDuffie Riots. That happened at the very same time you had all of these refugees coming from Cuba. And then you had the beginning of the cocaine trade. All of that was just beginning, right at the time that I opened my bookstore. And knowing how multicultural was because I grew up here, from the beginning, literature from abroad or literature that tried to explain what was happening in this country was literature that interested me. So when you ask, what are the interesting books that I remember from the beginning, there's a writer that we just lost named Russell Banks. Russell Banks wrote a book called Continental Drift. Mm. And the book came out in 1983. And it was the first book that I remember becoming kind of a book that we took under our wing to be able to hand sell. And it's a book that talks about the clashing of cultures. It talks about these unemployed folks from New England who came down here to try to make their fortune. They were working middle-class people. And at the same time, it talked about Haitian boatlift people who were leaving Haiti because of the horrible baby doc and papa doc and, you know, what was happening in that world. and how they clashed here in Miami. So that was a time before multiculturalism was even discussed or talked about, or before people talked about so much of what we're seeing around the world right now, right? So Russell's book, Continental Drift, was a book that, you know, I just fell in love with. Russell unfortunately died. He became a good friend, and Russell died about 5 months ago. He was struggling with cancer, and he died at the age of 81. And through many other books that he's written, he's one of America's great writers, I think. Mm-hmm. Also at the time, I discovered a young poet who had written, he'd written a couple of other kind of novels, but he wrote a memoir that I just fell in love with, that opened up a part of the world to me that I knew nothing about. And that writer was Michael Ondaatje. Mm-hmm. And Michael, who went on to write The English Patient, yeah, and everything else, had written this gorgeous, gorgeous memoir called Running in the Family, a very lyrical memoir. And that opened up the floodgates for other writers to begin to write very, very personal, artful memoirs. And then he went on, he wrote a couple of novels before that, that were done in that style. The collected works of Billy the Kid was one of them. You know, but to show you how long it's been, you know, I was going through old papers and books, and I came across a manuscript. I came across a manila envelope that was sent to me by the great editor Sonny Mehta, who was the editor at Alfred Knopf. And there was a little note attached to this manuscript, and it said, here's one that I'm really high on and one that you will really, really like. And it turned out to be The English Patient. You know, I mean, I've been doing this a long time.
Is it because of the English course that you took? How were the actual mechanics of opening that first store? Were you, like, petrified or that no one would buy the first book?
What happened with me is that I was an English major and I didn't know what I wanted to do. So right. I actually went to law school for a couple of years. Yeah. And I only went for 2 out of 3 years because I knew I didn't want to be a lawyer. So getting into the world of literature was a act of self-preservation. I knew that I wanted to do it in order to make sure that I could find something that I was passionate about. So I was very fortunate. As long as I was passionate about it, my fear kind of went away. And, you know, in those days, you could do what I did. You could open a very small bookstore, which I did. I was in my mid-20s, and I opened a very tiny bookstore. And as soon as I opened the doors and people came and I saw the kinds of books people were buying, I knew that it would work. Yeah. I mean, I never had doubt, because Miami had been always thought of as not a very serious place. But I knew that it was serious, because when I mean serious, I don't mean serious books, but I mean people read. I could see it. People came. And to be frank, if people didn't come, I probably would have left Miami, because most of the friends that I have now are friends that I developed, you know, through opening the bookstore and all of that.
Was the Miami Book Fair, is that one of the first things that kind of came up out of this community, or is that like a more recent chapter?
No, this year is the 40th Miami Book Fair.
Right,
as
I had
well.
Seen that. Yeah, which is so impressive.
I and the president of Miami-Dade College, Eduardo Padron, a marvelous, brilliant educator, we were both younger at the time, and we basically wanted to do something that would bring attention to downtown Miami. And I always had the idea of wanting to do a book fair, and he had been at a book festival in Barcelona, and we just did it. You know, there weren't any role models at the time. So we're sort of the first big community-wide book festival that started in the United States the way we are. And from here, so many others developed. It was really kind of amazing. to watch. And I was confident again because I knew people would come. Publishers thought we were crazy because they didn't think of Miami again as a place where, you know, they would want to send me a kind of non-prescription drug book author, you know, somebody talking about how to get healthy through supplements. And I wanted Susan Sontag to come,
yeah,
or James Baldwin to come. And we were able to get them early on. James Baldwin came to our very first book festival. And it was amazing. And the beauty of it all was the community turned out. So thousands and thousands of people came. And because what we did is we provided a book festival that was something for everyone. We had Haitian writers. We had writers from every part of the community. We had programs in Spanish and Creole. And, you know, people came. And it's because we kind of knew the community, just as you know Brussels, which is why I'm very excited by the fact that your book festival is going to be, you know, is focusing on your part of the world. It's the kind of thing where you bring readers and writers together. That's basically what we do. We bring readers together with writers so that they can interact with people so readers can interact with people they read, and then writers will have the ability, you know, to realize that they're not working in a vacuum. It's not really a conference. We're not trying to solve any problem. We're just trying to bring people together through literature. That's kind of what we're doing. So we're bringing the community in celebration of the written word. There are also tables and booths where publishers and individual authors can show their work. All of those things begin to happen.
What do you think about the ideas that come out of these days, though? Like, how do they get to live? Do they live on? Like, have there been things that have been perpetuated throughout the last 40 years that have just
surprised you
or blown your mind, or you thought would go one way and then they just didn't? Or,
oh God, I mean, you know, it happens on such a personal level with writers and with readers and with young kids. I mean, this being our 40th book festival and me having the store for 41 years, I have people now who are, you know, 50 years old coming to me to tell me how they, you know, had their love of reading fueled by coming, having their parents bring them to the book festival or the bookstore. So, you know, the impact is great and wide. And on, for me personally, some of the events and some of the things that we were able to bring to Miami, you know, are just so, you know, I pinch myself.
Yeah.
I mean, we did an event in the 90s with every living Nobel Prize winning poet.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
And that was in the 90s. And at the time, it was Octavio Paz, Derek Walcott, and Czesław Miłosz. And they came and they gave a reading together, all three of them. We did something early on, as I told you in the very first one with James Baldwin, just a couple years before he died. We were able to present Allen Ginsberg, and we presented Mario Vargas Llosa, and people like Susan Sontag did come, Joseph Heller, Saul Bellow. We had writers from France like Marek Halter. We had African writers like Ngugi Wa Thiong'o. You know, I mean, the list goes on and on. We've had thousands of writers we were able to expose Miami to. And I'm very proud of that. And strange things happen. You know, Miami wasn't in anyone's consciousness in the early days. And I remember we brought the French writer Marek Halter to see Miami. And the next thing I know, a couple months later, a gigantic article appeared in Le Monde, written about this place called Miami that was remaking itself. You know, it's hard to quantify just, you know, how important having this book festival and developing a literary community in Miami really is.
What do you feel like when you hear about book bannings in the same country? And there's no sense of any of that touching all the way down to you guys, is there? Or
of course there is. I mean, not in the bookstore or the book fair, but we have to fight book banning all the time. We're living with a governor that is like Viktor Orban.
Of course.
He's steamrolling it. So libraries and schools are under attack. Fortunately, they can't keep books out of my store yet, and nor will they ever. Nor will I ever permit that to happen. And so far, they have not interfered with the people that we've been inviting to the book fair. But those are mountains that we would have to go to battle on if they tried.
Didn't you think they were flattened by now, or no? Has it always been there in the last decades in the U.S. and it just seemed like...
No, this is aggressive. Much worse. There's always been book banning, but it never came from the government.
Right.
Now it's coming from the government, which is really frightening. And we don't have a Supreme Court that we can feel lots of confidence in anymore either. And you're seeing that happen in Europe as well, right?
Absolutely. I mean,
countries are turning, you know, to the right. And we have to all band together and fight this. We have a mural in our courtyard that says censorship leaves us in the dark. And that's really what we believe. You cannot allow censorship to take hold anywhere. What am I reading? I am reading right now a book, again, another book by Michael Ondaatje, actually. That is an older book. It's called Warlight.
Okay.
Warlight. It's a beautiful, beautiful book that he wrote years ago. And I'm reading it for the second time.
Okay.
And it's really, really wonderful, to be honest. I'm also reading a book. There's a bunch of good Miami local authors. And there's a wonderful one that's coming out by Anna Menendez called The Apartment. And it takes place in Miami. Miami is fortunate to have a lot of great... We could do a whole nother podcast on the Miami literary world. Which we probably should.
I'm Alia Papageorgiou, and this podcast was made possible by our wonderful producer, Paul McNally, at podcast.brussels. We'll be back with more interviews, ideas, and episodes soon. Keep writing, if you're writing, and join us for the Writers' Festival of Belgium on the 13th and 14th of October of this year. You'll find all our details on Twitter and Facebook, and we'll talk to you soon.